Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. Today we're talking with Linda Vero, president of Broadreach Public Relations, and she's also an adjunct professor talking about HR up at Thomas College. So, Linda, thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you, David, for having me. Appreciate
Good.
It.
Well, no, it's great. Great to have you on. So, you know, first of all, because obviously people may say, what is Broadreach Public Relations and why would somebody from that organization be talking about HR? Tell me a little about the organization and tell me a little bit about, you know, your background.
Certainly, David. Broadreach Public Relations provides high-level strategic communications and marketing services to some of New England's most highly regarded firms. We work with large-scale professional organizations, and we help them build their credibility, raise their profile, and in essence, expand their reach. So what does that look like? That means we do quite a bit of content marketing, earned media, and then we work with their communication strategies, whether they're internal strategies or external, to basically be heard and get everyone on the same page, speaking with the same voice.
Well, communication is key, and certainly I can speak from personal relationship that the fact that your firm does a great job because we've used you many, many times. And matter of fact, we're finishing up a project right now. So I can certainly attest to that. But from an HR perspective, relations, getting that message out is key. And, talk to me about your background and why HR has been a big part of why that's there.
Well, I spent 25 years in banking, and aside from my time in retail banking, that is, you know, a loan officer working behind a teller line, I took on projects and dealt a lot with mergers and acquisitions and new product rollouts, technology initiatives, change initiatives. And the common denominator to all of those for success was communication. And I found that was an area I really loved. I wanted everybody to really understand what was happening, why we were doing it, and their role in helping us be successful in that process. And so when I left banking, it made sense for me to be more involved in communication. And my degree is a little bit different. I always tell people, you know, no, I don't come to the table with a marketing degree. I come to the table with an organizational leadership degree. My master's is really how to get things done through people. And if you think about it, every project we work on involves two things, people and communication. And so if we can improve in those two areas, then, you know, we know we're going to be a little bit more successful. It's not necessarily guaranteed, but it'll help the process along.
So you're up at Thomas College. Tell me about what you're teaching up there.
I am at Thomas College. I'll be teaching in the fall 2013, and I'm really looking forward to it. I've taught advertising and promotion, marketing on the internet, and this last semester I taught human resource management for the first time, so that was pretty exciting. And with all of the new laws that are out there, it gave me some new insight into the profession that I have a degree in. But I realized trying to teach the students was a little bit difficult if they haven't actually worked in an environment. So I really tried to teach the class as though it was from the employee's perspective. So when we were talking about recruitment, when we were talking about selection, the hiring process, performance management, compensation and benefit, you know, all of those different things, I really turned it around so that they understood how it affected them and their role within the organization. So,
based upon what you've seen, and we won't just speak about just Thomas College, but in education in general, there's been a lot of talk that what is being taught from an HR perspective or for any perspective in that area sometimes doesn't match what the person comes out and has to start the role in.
One, have you seen that? Two, do you have some thoughts on how that can be addressed, or maybe that partnership between business and the universities, colleges, educational system in general, and how to focus on that a little?
Yes, I have seen it, and I catch myself in the classes when I'm explaining concepts. I'll say things like, well, we actually don't speak that way in real life. So I want to preface that, which is unfortunate because the textbooks are basically provided to give us that perfect world scenario. So I'm finding that I'm bringing real life scenarios to the table, like, yes, this is how it's supposed to work, given the laws, given the rules, given the constructs in which we hire, fire, run a business, but here's what you're going to be up against. And so I try to bring real world situations to the table, which I think that's how it's going to get fixed. You still need to have that foundational theoretical knowledge, but you really need to have the real life examples, like what's happening, what happens through a merger, what happens when you have a change initiative in an organization, what happens when you roll out new technology. That planning and project management is key. And so people need to understand that what they're reading in a book can only be applied to a certain level. And then it really takes gut, it takes gumption, and it takes some foresight to be able to kind of work through these processes.
Well, certainly, you know, if everything was as simple as an inanimate object, it would be great. But people have emotion, and they have passion, and they have, you know, anger and frustration. And communication is not that simple. You know, it's interesting. Last week on the HR Power Hour, we were talking with a couple people. One is Mike Miles, who's the HR director for the city of Portland. And he talked about, you know, union versus non-union environments. And one of the ways he said to keep an environment non-union is to have supervisors who truly can communicate well and are trained to develop. And, you know, when I talk to students that come out of universities and I talk to, you know, starting professionals, they struggle with that communication. They do. They struggle with it. And yes, there's a growth period there. They have to understand it. But I think, you know, I look at it as how can we do a better job at a college level?
Well, that's a great question. How can we do a better job? Well, one of the first lessons that I put forth this last semester was teaching all about candor. If you're going to get into HR, you need to adopt a communication style that's rich in candor. And people need to know when they're doing a really great job, and they need to know when they're not. It's what we call give credit where credit's due, and everyone always thinks that means the slap on the back, but it doesn't. It also means telling people when they're falling short of what their expectations are and holding them accountable. And I think people are afraid of that because it's not always popular. And so if people can go into the process with their eyes wide open, it makes for an easier transition into the environment. You talked a little bit about how can we make it better. And one of the things that I've noticed in the educational world is that we're not taking into account learning styles of our students. The traditional classroom is still a lot of reading. And we need to keep in mind that a very small segment of the population actually learns by reading. They learn by doing. They learn by hearing. They learn by a combination of things. And so we try to bring into the workplace, you know, or into the classroom, you know, more activities, more real life scenarios, what ifs, group work, games, you know, different things like that. So they need to get in the trenches. That's how we're going to help them be successful and come into the workplace. You know, internships, apprenticeships are a must, and I wish more organizations were considering them.
Well, I'm certainly sure that when you're thinking about the challenges that are faced by employers and bringing in, you know, people such as interns, and I know in the next segment we're going to have a good section on internships, but segueing into that, there are some challenges that employers face of what they can and cannot do when it comes to interns. You know, there's a school of thought that says interns, you know, fill gaps. They do what's necessary, but they also take time to train. And, you know, in these day and age of every dollar counts and every minute counts and we're running lean, you know, what is it that we can do as an employer or to advocate for the use of interns or other assistants in this area?
Well, the first thing is recognizing interns are not free labor. So let's get that straight right here. Interns are really our future workforce, and our job in whatever industry you're in is to craft a plan, you know, make sure you have an idea of what you want this intern to know when they leave. And know means know what you do for work, know how your work relates within your industry, and then also that you're helping them learn to be an employee. And that's the piece that a lot of people don't think about. They bring the intern in and they file and they answer the phone and they follow people around, but no one ever sits down with them and says, okay, this is a job description. This is what it means. This is why it's important. Let's talk about a performance appraisal. Let's talk about salary and benefits and cost of benefits and what that really looks like. So when you go out to look for a job, you really get a good sense of what's going on. So having an intern means you are being a mentor to someone who is part of our future workforce. And you have to be agreeable to take that on.
We're talking to Linda Verrill. She's the president of Broadreach Public Relations, or Broadreach PR, we like to say in short. And we are listening to the HR Power Hour. We will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you frustrated with medical care today? Does it make you angry that your doctor spends more time looking at the computer screen than at you? Does it seem like your doctor is out the door in 5 minutes? There is a better alternative. At Champy Family Practice, Dr. Michael Champy and his dedicated staff make taking care of patients their priority. They are a cash-friendly direct pay practice, which is the perfect option for people with no insurance, high deductibles, and health savings accounts. Unlike other practices, they post their prices in the office and even online. Get modern medical care delivered the old-fashioned way. For more information, call ChampyFamilyPractice.com. That's C-I-A-M-P-I. Or call 774-1222. Champy Family Practice is located at 380 Lincoln Street in South Portland. Champy Family Practice. Continuing a tradition of medical excellence in Greater Portland since 1959.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And we're talking with Linda Verrill today. Linda, thanks again for being on the show.
Thank you, David.
You know, we were talking beforehand about interns, and I think I'd like to continue that dialogue because it's more than interns. It's apprenticeships. It's temporary help. But first, let's start with the intern question. You know, you mentioned a little bit why someone would bring it in and the misconception that it's, quote-unquote, free help. That certainly doesn't mean to say that they aren't going to be somebody who's coming in and assisting with projects or assisting with an area. Talk to me a little bit about that perception, that misconception that's out there.
Right. Interns are very near and dear to my heart as far as making sure that we're mentoring this next generation within our workforce. And this summer, I'll have you know, we seem to have a higher demand for intern positions. We received 8 to 10 applications. We've interviewed six, And we're actually bringing on two interns this summer, which would be the middle of May. So the first key to an internship is knowing what your capacity is with respect to managing them, who in the company is going to manage them, what they're going to be learning, how long they're going to be there, what the structure is going to be, and then how you're going to measure and monitor them, and then finally how you're going to pay them. So I guess the best would be to just talk about what we do at Broadreach. So our internship is 10 weeks, 20 hours a week, and we pay a stipend. We pay half up front, we pay half at the end. And the laws are pretty clear on what we can and can't do. So the law says that we are not able to earn revenue off of the intern's work.
Right. So profit from.
Basically, we cannot profit from them. So in our case, I simply track their hours as unbillable. So they still may work on behalf of a client, or they may work on a project. They're simply unbillable, and or what we call not billed. And so that works for them, that works for us, and I can actually give them, you know, meaningful tasks and projects to work on. So it goes back to my original point about having a plan. So in our office, we have an executive assistant who is also fairly new out of college. So she is going to be learning some of the fundamentals of supervision. So she's going to be overseeing the interns and their daily workflow. And she and I will be meeting on a regular basis. So it actually is not only mentoring the interns, it's mentoring our executive assistant as well. So it provides a benefit there to give you some structure and some organizational parameters. So again, I want to go back to the teaching them how to be an employee. Your work is your work, David. You have certain tasks that need to get done in your organization, as do
sure
we.
Do.
So it's really figuring out what's the core of what you do and exposing them to all those different aspects. And it's going to be different for every organization. But I challenge everyone, every company who wants to take on an intern, please take the time to teach them how to be an employee. What does it mean to show up on time? If your task is to get coffee or do the dishes or clean or, you know, put paper in the photocopier, whatever that is, they need to be proud about it. No work in a company is less important. And so that's the piece that's really hard. I remember getting the comment when we hired interns that said, well, I just want to learn PR. It's like, well, you're going to make photocopies. That's part of what we do here. You know, there was this real negative thought about menial tasks and administrative work. And, you know, we really need to put that to bed. You know, people need to come to the table that all tasks are important to serve the client and for a well-functioning office.
You know, there are people who do come to work and think that it's all glory. Right. I certainly remember that, you know, people would say to me, wow, you travel quite a bit. That must be amazing. And yes, it was fun. But, you know, there still was the every night in a hotel and not being at home and dealing with all this. And they you don't necessarily see that. And internships, at least it gives you a flavor for what the real world is. And I fully support them. I think they're critical to any organization, or critical to getting a real exposure to what it is of real life.
You bet, David. And what's interesting is after the interns have been in the office, and we've had three interns and one apprentice, I always hear the same thing. Wow, I didn't realize this is what public relations was all about. And it's an interesting concept, because when I ask them at the beginning of an internship, well, what do you think public relations is? Oh, well, it's all about events. So that's pretty funny. And they realize that it's not hardly about events at all. It's more about communication and strategy and, you know, being aware of the environment and figuring out ways to position a client and get their story out there. And that might be in marketing materials. That might be in traditional media. That might be in social media. Yes, we might do an event or a trade show or radio show just like this, having one of our clients on. But they do get to see that it's very different than what they learned in school.
You talked about apprenticeship. There might be someone out there going, well, isn't that the same thing as internship? And certainly we know it's not, but give a little bit of a difference between the two.
Absolutely, David. Apprenticeships are a way to fill a need in your organization without making it a long-term commitment. So our apprenticeship is a six-month program. It's 25 to 28 hours a week. It's paid. So it's paid an hourly wage. And again, it has the same plan as far as what we want them to learn, what they're going to get out of it. But this way, as a small company, I'm not making a commitment to a full-on part-time person. And if it works out, great, I'll continue to hire them. But in the case of our last intern, she was amazing. PR wasn't exactly what she wanted to do. She came to the table with some graphic design, and now she has two awesome part-time jobs based on her apprenticeship at Broadreach. So she was able to really go to the next level in her career, and so it helped give her that boost, and we knew there was a beginning, there was an ending, and this was the expectation. So by setting those boundaries, it really helps both the apprentice and the company. And, you know, if it works out, then great, hire them on for full time. And it isn't a matter of does it work out or doesn't it work out. People need to understand your industry, and that apprenticeship just gives them that next level to go deeper, and they can get a sense of what you do and make some smart decisions about, this isn't really what I want to be doing for my career.
Well, you know, I think the key takeaway here for HR professionals is they may have thought apprenticeship only applies if you're going to apprentice as a welder, as a machinist, as someone who is in the manufacturing area, and that there are apprenticeships in white-collar positions in most companies. They just may not actually do them or may not have thought of them. But there are rules and regulations that apply to it, and so it's not something you just run out and do, but I think you need to establish set policies, set procedures, and even talk about employee handbooks and making sure they're caught up to date and that all these rules and regulations are clearly spelled out as to what you're going to do from that for that organization and those people.
Right, absolutely. And it's funny that you talk about employee handbook, because I want to give David a little plug. His team, Audra, and he worked on our employee handbook. So we just delivered that to our employees. So we were really excited. It's all 100% up to date and compliant, at least for the next 20 days or until
the next rule and regulation pops out of Augusta or Washington. Yes, that is correct.
Right, absolutely. But we did add to our list of employment status, we have an intern and we have an apprentice, and they're very different in what we do with those employees. So, but I would be remiss in mentioning we also use temp help, and Christy Hillman at Career Management has been amazing. We've used two right now. I mean, we're pretty small. So in the last year, we've had two temporary positions, and both of them were fabulous. So I highly recommend, be clear on what you want. Don't settle for less. And both of them have worked out terrifically.
Temps are a great solution to short-term projects or issues where you have voids and you need to fill. Also, if you have a long-term project and you're just not sure it's going to continue and you just want to bring somebody in and see how they're doing, it's good to see if somebody can do what you need them to do and to test them out. And you don't have to worry about paying for unemployment or paying for taxes or paying for anything. It's just, you get to, it's like a test ride and really use them. But you use them in a good way and see if the fit is there. So you're right. It is a great, a great mechanism for an employee to show their wares before they go in.
Absolutely. In one particular case, we, as you can imagine, in PR, our work is quite tedious. So we have this laundry list of tasks that need to get done on behalf of our clients. And so we had a temporary gal who was extremely well-versed in Access. And so she built us a database and came in, and come to find out she had a finance background, so she was able to help organize some other things. And we actually tried to hire her, and somebody else hired her out from under us. So, you know, the quality is there if you know exactly what you're looking for. And then our second position, who's still with us, She is going to law school, but she was looking for an administrative job and came to the table with the right skills and has really taken off. And, you know, thanks in part to the testing and the screening that they do, that Christy does. So,
yeah, that's great. Linda, we're going to take a quick break, but we're going to come back and we're going to talk about more about HR and some hot topics that are out there today. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we'll be right back.
Maine DOT has a special announcement for northbound drivers who routinely take I-295's Exit 15 in Yarmouth. Stop taking Exit 15. I repeat, stop taking Exit 15. It's not your exit anymore. It was your exit once, but not now. Forget about northbound Exit 15. Exit 15 is not for you. Actually, Maine DOT is adding a brand new on-ramp there, and to do that safely and quickly, closing Exit 15 is required starting March 12th. So if you're driving northbound on Interstate 295 and headed for Route 1 in Yarmouth, take Exit 10 in Falmouth or Exit 17. Temporary traffic signals will make taking those alternate exits safe and convenient. You can take Exit 15 southbound, but just forget all about Exit 15 northbound, at least until June. Sometime in June, you can take Exit 15 then. Take it all you want. Exit 15 will be yours once again. A message from Maine DOT. There's better road ahead. Drive safely.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Packers.
Vikings.
We come from different places.
Uptown.
Downtown.
We come to different conclusions.
Half empty.
Half full.
But when we live united, we make a real difference in the building blocks of life. Children succeed in school, families gain financial stability, the health of our neighbors improves, and suddenly so do our communities. Real change won't happen without you.
Live united.
So give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Sign up today at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and it's presented by CMAcareer.com. We're talking to Linda Vero here. And, you know, Linda, one of the things that I think HR professionals need to continually think about is how to properly structure and properly manage internal communication within an organization. Certainly, we've talked about on this show hundreds of times now, and certainly with, I think, almost every guest. The challenges communication face, no matter what HR process you're going through, whether it be wellness, whether it be benefits, whether it be payroll, communication is the key. Whether you're dealing with conflict resolution, whether you're dealing with communication of a new program or a new process, it's about communication and how you structure that internally as well as externally to clients and or customers is key. So tell me about how you think a good structure could be set up. Tell me about the process someone might go through to set up a good internal communication. And of course, tell me about how you can help in that process, because I think that certainly when you're dealing with a company that may not really know how to do that well, I truly believe you bring an expert to help them out.
The process for internal communication is really no different than the process for external communication in that we need to clearly identify our audiences. We need to have a good handle on our message, and we need to make sure those messages are being delivered consistently across a variety of channels. And as I discussed about learning styles earlier in the segment, those same concepts apply in internal communication, how people learn, how people retain information. And the old adage says, well, people need to see, read, or hear something 7 times in order to get it. So when you're structuring your internal communications program, you want to be thinking about those things. Am I providing different ways for employees to learn things? And am I providing a centralized location where they can get that information? So it starts with who needs to know. So that's your audience. What do they need to know? How often do they need to know it? And where can they go to get that information? And so a lot of companies, you know, still use the traditional, you know, email and memo push. That's great in a smaller organization. Hopefully they're doing some face-to-face in that environment. But you're seeing a lot today with organizations using intranets, social platforms, different communication vehicles to get their messaging out. So let's take, for example, if you're going to be changing your benefits package, which I'm sure most of you are because of some of the healthcare changes and some of the costs that we're seeing. So the key is being very clear on what it is that's happening, how it affects them, and how they can get more information. The era of being defensive or need-to-know basis really doesn't apply anymore. You know, companies need to be transparent. They need to be candid. They need to be quick. They need to get information out to employees sooner than later. And they need to enlist others in getting those communication messages out. So it's creating kind of a communication loop as opposed to just, you know, the one-way, two-way communication.
You know, social media has certainly made communication more direct, more quick. And, you know, certainly we've talked to organizations that have thought about how they want to use social media. And we'll talk about, after this, the challenges of using social media. But they may use communication through social media, either Twitter or maybe Facebook even, and even LinkedIn, to try to push messages out to their employees, whether it be from a public relations standpoint or an internal standpoint. They might create a group on LinkedIn or Facebook that's closed, and they use that for internal communication. Have you seen a lot of this as we start to hear about this more and more, and maybe some of the challenges that faces?
Right, David. Where you're seeing it is really in some of the larger organizations that have a distributed workforce, whether it's national or global. But the key really is making sure it's secure, making sure it's organized. And that's why a lot of the bigger companies are looking at intranets, so that they can ensure that those standards are adhered to. I mean, you saw in the news the other day where an AP Twitter account had been hacked. So that is obviously on the top of a lot of HR executives' minds, as well as the C-suite. How safe is, or how safe are the social media channels? And you really do want to be careful there. If it's a professional group, that's great. If it's a project group, there are other tools and collaboration vehicles, whether it's SharePoint or whether it's, you know, you're out in Google or you're within your own network and intranet. So collaboration is key. It's just deciding on the tool and how you're going to be using it.
If somebody wants to set up a new internal communication process, what are some of the steps they should look past the point of knowing who their audience is? What are some of the key things you would say, make sure you do this?
Make sure you finish what you start and make sure that you're consistent. So, for instance, if you want to have a monthly HR newsletter that just gives updates on benefits and compensation, so you want to make sure you're consistent about that, it goes out on a regular basis, and that people can expect it and they know where it is. You want to also make sure that you're addressing those different learning styles, that you're making information available by reading, perhaps doing some videos, perhaps having some face-to-face sessions. And so you want to utilize all the different channels and methods of communication. You also want to make sure you have a feedback loop. Corporate America is very used to pushing information out. We're not so good as pulling it back in. And so creating that feedback loop really provides an opportunity for employees to be heard and to have a voice. And whether that's, you know, roundtable or town hall discussions, lunch and learns, you know, meet and greets with the executive management team, offsite meetings, you know, whatever that is. But I hate to say it, comes down to a fundamental editorial calendar and a schedule of how we're going to be doing this. And then it's a commitment to that communication discipline, because communication in the end is a discipline. You get what you put out there. So if you're not telling people how things are, they're going to be running around questioning it and unfortunately making things up.
Speaking of the communication, I know there's etiquette and there's a professionalism that has to be addressed in proper communication. Social media in this day and age, sometimes those lines appear to be less clear. So when a company is thinking about, you know, sending out communication, they want to be, lack the term, cool or hip, is that really something they should do, or should they stick with traditional lines of communication?
That's a great question, David. I think it really depends on the corporate culture. I mean, if folks come in with jeans and t-shirts and, you know, comfortable shoes, and they hang out in collaboration units, then you can be hip and cool in your communication. But if you're, you know, an accounting firm or you're a bank, you know, you still need to have a level of professionalism, and it really needs to mirror your culture. So there's not a straight answer to that. But hopefully that helps you out.
No, I think it's important because, you know, you hear it now. Spelling or, you know, slang is used quite a bit in communication, especially on social media. But, you know, I'm not going to lie. I see communication that comes across from emails from very serious professionals that is questionable in nature, and isn't spelled right or isn't really phrased right. And it does make you pause and think.
It does. And David, like you, you know, I travel a lot across New England and talk to CEOs. And one of their biggest frustration when it comes to communication is that people don't know how to write anymore. And so grammar, spelling, they do matter, especially in a B2B space, especially in a professional space. Those types of skill sets, sadly, are getting lost. And, you know, one of the resources on the desk of all of my employees is the old Strunk and White Handbook to Good Writing. So I'm not sure if that's the exact title, but we call it Strunk and White.
That's an old book, but it still applies. I really do think it still applies because, you know, we deal with people who are looking for jobs. And when it's misspelled on a resume or it's misspelled in the cover letter, it just changes the... You realize that they don't take the time and the level of detail needed, and that works through your whole career, really your whole career that you're dealing with in this particular area.
Oh, it does. It does.
The last thing I'll ask in regards to internal communication is we find the biggest challenge is people don't understand their benefits. They don't truly understand. And it may not be that they say, well, I may not need this right now. But when the HR professional, the person who gets asked the question, may not even know the answer because they just haven't dealt with that in a long time. So they either try to make it up or they try to just kind of give a general answer. They shove a flyer at the person. How can they ensure that they really understand communication well in those situations and the impact of it?
Right. Explanation of benefits is really, I think, an art form. And I'm very thankful in my past career, we were given COBs, cost of benefits. And we really got an understanding of how much our entire benefit package cost us or cost the company and the value to us. And so I think that's really important. And interestingly enough, I just had a conversation like this with a new hire, was let's talk about all of the benefits here other than salary and things that we take for granted, holiday, sick time, professional development, tuition reimbursement, how much of the health plan is being paid for, what's being included in it. And so for HR professionals, translation is probably one of the biggest challenges. And that's why I highly recommend working with your marketing department or your PR professional, because that's what I used to do in my prior career, was work with HR to make sure that the messages were clear, everything was easy to understand, and people knew how the benefits affected them directly. And we were able to get those messages across. And I actually did the writing and worked with HR when benefits change. So whether it was health savings accounts, high deductible health plans, the differences between FSAs, HSAs, or HRAs, people need to understand how those all work in very fundamental terms.
We're talking with Linda Vero, Broadreach PR, and we will be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you frustrated with medical care today? Does it make you angry that your doctor spends more time looking at the computer screen than at you? Does it seem like your doctor is out the door in 5 minutes? There is a better alternative. At Champy Family Practice, Dr. Michael Champy and his dedicated staff make taking care of patients their priority. They are a cash-friendly direct pay practice, which is the perfect option for people with no insurance, high deductibles, and health savings accounts. Unlike other practices, they post their prices in the office and even online. Get modern medical care delivered the old-fashioned way. For more information, call ChampyFamilyPractice.com. That's C-I-A-M-P-I. Or call 774-1222. Champy Family Practice is located at 380 Lincoln Street in South Portland. Champy Family Practice. Continuing a tradition of medical excellence in Greater Portland since 1959.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts, stoprex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com. And we are doing the final segment here with Linda Vero of Broadreach PR. You know, Linda, in today's day and age, communication through social media, we've been talking about it a lot, even applies to the hiring process. You have LinkedIn, now probably the number one place, actually not probably, absolutely the number one place where people are going to put their information and connect with people in regards to trying to find a job or networking, which, as we all know, is the key to finding a job. There is and should be proper ways of doing this. And it would be great to hear the perspective from a communication expert on how people should think about setting up their profile, how to think about how they should properly link with people that they may or may not know, and how the networking process really works with there, and maybe some rules of the road, if we wanted to go from that. And certainly, you know, we do a lot of career transition work and talk a lot about this. But from a communication standpoint, I'd love to hear your perspective in terms of that.
Absolutely, David. LinkedIn is very near and dear to my heart. I've been on it since 2007 when we didn't really know exactly what it was. And we've learned a lot over the years. LinkedIn is the largest professional network online. And so I highly recommend, even to my students, you know, please set up your profile. And you want to keep it strictly professional. The one thing about LinkedIn that I love is I don't have to worry about hearing about what my friends had for dinner, where they're going on vacation, you know, or see baby pictures. Not that I don't want to see them, but I can be pretty much guaranteed I'm not going to see it on LinkedIn. So the other thing I'm going to be guaranteed is that it's not a competition for who has a more exciting life. No one is keeping track of how often you're on LinkedIn or any of those types of things that you see in some of the other channels. So first and foremost, your LinkedIn profile needs to be complete. And that includes, you know, positions that you've had. So I'll give you a perfect example. Broadreach Public Relations, the name is pretty clear what we do. So I can comfortably put president in the title. But if I just had Broadreach, no one knows what that means. So to have president doesn't say anything. So I might want to actually say public relations professional, or I might want to say president public relations firm. I want to make sure that the name of my company or the name of the company that you work for and your title, the two of those together can give people a pretty good idea of who you are and what you do. It's like in the real estate world when I see broker. Well, are you a residential? Are you a commercial? Are you a buyer, broker, or seller? What do you do? The other is in your description. You want to make sure your keywords are sound, they make sense, that it speaks to what you've actually done. And then fill out the profile. Where you went to school, awards that you've had, clubs and organizations that you belong to that are professionally focused. You want to include your interests as well. So,
now, I'll just let me just jump in there a little, because obviously from a career standpoint, people might say, well, interests, should I put everything down? And, you know, our advice is typically that you never put anything down that could be perceived as political, could be seen as something that may be hot topic issue that somebody could look at and rail against. Maybe you're a hunter. Maybe you're someone who is part of a political party. Typically, if you're looking for a job, we'd probably caution them to necessarily put that on there. And again, depending on what they're looking for, because you're trying not to be eliminated from the process. Neither one of those are wrong, by the way. There's nothing wrong with that. But again, you don't know who the hiring manager and what their views are. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that to some degree. In my case, you know, I've included on my profile that I play golf, I ski, I have golden retrievers. So hopefully that doesn't mean a cat person isn't going to hire me. But, you know, that might be the case. So you do want to be careful about what you put for your interests and really only include a few of your top ones. What's more important is to include your skills.
Absolutely.
And you're seeing a lot with that now with the endorsements. And I do caution people, though, it isn't a quid pro quo with these skills in the endorsements. Unless you have personally experienced someone's work in that area, don't endorse them and don't feel like you're obligated to do so. But LinkedIn is a great place to be to showcase your expertise. You can get involved in the questions and answers. You can get involved in groups. You can follow different companies that perhaps you want to work at. You know, so if you want a job at, say, IDEX or WEX or one of the hospitals here, then start following them. Start seeing what's happening. Look at their LinkedIn profiles. Look at their Facebook pages. You know, start to learn more about them in that way. I'm amazed that I still get job applicants and even interns who have not taken 5 minutes to go learn about Broadreach or to go learn about me. In today's age, there's no excuse for that. There's so much information out there.
It is a critical piece of the puzzle. You know, no longer is anyone's anonymity out there. I mean, if you run an organization, if you're a hiring manager, you're going to be seen. And to have somebody come in and not know the company, not know anything about it at all, you're not going to get hired, because the fact is that you didn't take the time. And you didn't really show the respect of what the organization can provide for you in terms of that. On the communication side, one more time, let's talk a little bit about, if I can, what you see as trends maybe in communication. Maybe things that are moving in what direction. We're talking about social media quite a bit. But is there anything out there, anything new in communication that professionals should look for? Any new sites? Do you see more coming out on Twitter now? I know that that's certainly getting more recognition. That's probably like the new Facebook in the sense of it's getting bigger and bigger out there. What are you seeing for some communication trends that people should be focused on?
I think the first communication trend is really focused on crisis and response type communication. Folks are setting up social media channels, people are talking more, and all of a sudden you're seeing crises or you're seeing inappropriate conversation, and this is all a new space. So folks aren't really sure how to deal with this. And so we spend a lot of time in monitoring, and we spend a lot of time in handling and responding to various social media posts or communication. So that whole response mechanism is new, because now it's public and forever.
Yeah, there is no delete. I always say all the time, once you've posted it, you can delete it. It's still there. it still could be found if somebody wanted to do the digging part and really pull it out. So, you know, I certainly would caution everyone, as I'm sure you would. That old adage of don't response for an emotional gut reaction still applies today. You know, take the time.
It does still apply today. And I think the second is really, what is the truth? And we're seeing that a lot with students coming out of college. Well, I read it on the internet or it was in Wikipedia. And you simply can't accept that. You need to go find the original source. You need to dig through to the truth. And so candor, how to be honest, all of those types of things. We're coming back to actually some fundamental skills.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's all coming back, isn't it? All the old things which are going to be new again. And, you know, it's like the 80s coming back. Now it's all, you know, all that stuff, it's coming back. Though there are some things in the 80s that should have never come back. We'll just accept that right now at this point. You know, Linda, I got to tell you, I've known you a while and certainly known you. Your organization does great work. You have some fun pets over there at the office, some beautiful dogs. Tell me about them.
I do. We have 3 golden retrievers, and today, interestingly enough, one of them is extremely muddy. So if anyone comes to the office today, I just beware. But yes, we have 3 goldens. One is 2.5, the other's 5.5, and the oldest is 14.5, Gracie, Zoe, and Maddie.
Well, they become part of the family over there at Broadreach, don't they?
They are.
What other employees that you would like to showcase today for their talents maybe at your organization?
Well, I think first and foremost, I need to recognize our administrative professional. Recently, we had Administrative Professionals Day, and we nominated her for Sea Dogs tickets. So she went to the Sea Dogs game last night. Very excited. She won the Hannaford Toss. So she got a gift card there, and that's Allie Hessert, and she's our executive administrator. She's going to be going off to law school in the fall, so we're very excited
for her.
Yeah, she's UMaine Law School.
Go UMaine,
so,
as
you
they
bet,
say.
You bet. And then, of course, you know, kind of the anchor in our company is Kelsey Goldsmith, and she is a whiz at getting our clients visibility, earned media, and really getting their stories out there. So I'm really thankful that Kelsey's on board with us. And then our newest hire, Mike Geneseo.
That's awesome. Well, I appreciate you very much being on the show today. The information is great in regards to communication, and I think that it gives a different perspective for HR professionals out there. And, of course, I can't speak enough about the organization. You guys do great work.
Thank you, David, as do you. So,
well, thank you. It's a love fest here on the HR Power Hour. And now your HR tip of the week. The share of older Americans as a percent of total population is increasing. This according to the UNC Institute on Aging, AARP, Merrill Lynch, Gallup, and Reuters University poll that were taken. Here are some of the key numbers. The projected median working age in America is up from 35 in 1986 to 42. 45% of Americans believe that they will have to retire later than expected. 59% of Americans aged 55 or more have less than $100,000 saved for retirement. And finally, 75% of Americans expect to have to work after retiring. Are you one of them? Think about it. And that's your HR tip of the week. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be giving you the sounds from the Maine HR Convention, which was on May 7th through 10th in 2013 at the Samoset Resort in Rockland, Maine. Jeremy Haskell, a guest here on the HR Power Hour, provided audio clips that he took from the actual HR convention as he spoke to business, HR leaders, and provided contents from the speakers as well as some of the winners of the event that happened there up at the convention. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 2 p.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 AM or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.